You're listening to Asia First Weekend Edition. Me, Justine Moss, crossing now to our US Bureau Chief, Simon Marks, in Washington, D.C. Hi, Simon.
Hello, Justine.
Another busy week in the U.S. Let's start off with the debate to begin in the U.S. Senate on Joe Biden's $1.9 trillion COVID-19 relief bill.
Yes, I'm bound to say I was hoping that by the time we got a chance to speak, this whole thing might be over. But inevitably, that's not the case. I mean, the Senate has been the scene for some truly astounding shenanigans over the last several hours. First of all, there was the move by Senator Ron Johnson of Wisconsin, one of those seditionist Republicans who just 7 weeks ago was trying to subvert the outcome of the election and stop Joe Biden from becoming president. Well, he insisted on Thursday night that the entire spending bill, the entire text of the spending bill, needed to be read aloud. And so for hours, the clerks of the U.S. Senate, these poor members of staff, were forced to read every scintilla of the legislation out loud. This went on until about 2:30 in the morning on Friday when they finally got through it, because there's more than 625 pages of tightly printed legislative ease that they had to read out. And this was a delaying tactic by Senator Johnson, who was, for most of this process, the only member of the Senate in the chamber. All he wanted to do was to delay the point at which voting could get underway on this packet of legislation, which, as you know, has already been passed and approved by the House of Representatives, where, of course, Democrats have a majority. And in the Senate, deadlock was broken over the issue of whether or not this thing should be put to a vote by Vice President Kamala Harris in her role as president of the Senate. It was a 50-50 split. She cast the deciding vote. So, having read all of the legislation and engaged in this sort of completely pointless exercise, then it looked like we were going to witness what they refer to here in Washington as Votorama, and a whole series of votes on this legislation. Well, it's all suddenly become stuck again because of a last-ditch effort by some Republicans in the Senate to water down and reduce the level of unemployment benefit that is contained in the bill in a bid to save, say, the Republicans more than $125 million. There's also a complexity because one Republican Senator, Dan Sullivan, has had to leave the building owing to some kind of a family issue. And so we don't quite know how that's going to impact where all of this goes over the next several hours. But remember, you know, the clock is ticking. People's unemployment benefits and pandemic relief payments start to expire on March the 15th. And every time you think, well, this thing is almost finally over and there will soon be a finished piece of legislation to head to the desk of President Joe Biden, there's suddenly yet another last minute spanner thrown into the works. So let's see if in 24 hours time, when we speak, we're able to say, well, it's all finally over. At the moment, there appears to be deadlock over this issue of unemployment insurance benefits. And we'll have to see where it heads in the next several hours.
Yeah, hopefully it will be over. And Simon, just other news this week, of course, March 4th. Let's just talk briefly about that. I know it's just a couple of days ago, but, you know, former President Donald Trump's supporters swore that he would return to power on that day. Threats to the U.S. Capitol. There were, you know, National Guard members armed with rifles, braced for that, you know, rebellion, which never did come. Talk more about that. It's been a scary week with all that.
Well, it's certainly been another alarming week in Washington. And on the issue of the National Guard, who remain on the streets of the city in their thousands, we now seem poised to continue hosting them here in Washington, D.C. for another 2 months. They were scheduled to leave in the middle of March. Now, the acting police chief on Capitol Hill is requesting their continued presence in Washington for at least the next 2 months, following that report that this week a right-wing militia was planning to launch a fresh assault against the Capitol building in a bid to grease the wheels of what conspiracy theorist believing supporters of former President Trump believed was going to be his triumphant political resurrection on March the 4th, for various reasons, I mean, frankly, too absurd to go into. They believed that on March the 4th, he was going to be sworn into power and he would oust President Joe Biden from the Oval Office. I mean, that, of course, was never ever going to happen. And yet there are many Americans who had persuaded themselves that this was possible, to the extent where, by the way, the Trump Hotel had tripled its room rates for two or three nights this week, because they were pretty confident that even if there wasn't going to be a new inauguration, there was certainly going to be a bit of a payday possible as a result of the presence of so many Trump fans in Washington, D.C., anticipating his resurrection. So it didn't happen. Another disappointment for conspiracy theorist believing supporters of the former president, who will have to wait for a later opportunity for him to make some kind of a political comeback. But it certainly put a fresh focus on the security situation here. And there were congressional hearings this week that raised all sorts of fresh questions about why on January the 6th, the day of the initial insurrection on Capitol Hill, it took so long for the Pentagon to approve the use of National Guard to protect the building. The head of the Washington, D.C. National Guard testified on Capitol Hill this week that it took almost 3.5 hours for his emergency request to the Pentagon for the National Guard force to be deployed to Capitol Hill as the building was being breached. It took 3.5 hours for that request to be approved, which is simply astounding and raises all sorts of questions about why there was a delay. And those are questions that members of Congress are absolutely going to dig into over the next few weeks, suspicious as many of them are that the Pentagon chiefs, who had only recently been appointed by Donald Trump and were very loyal to him, were, if not taking their orders directly from President Trump, then certainly deeply concerned about doing anything that was going to antagonize him by sending those National Guard troops to the building. So lots and lots of questions still to be answered about exactly what took place here almost exactly 2 months ago.
You're listening to Asia First Weekend Edition. Me, Justine Moss, speaking with our US Bureau Chief Simon Marks in Washington, D.C. Simon, let's switch to COVID-19 now. Leaders and businesses, you know, saying masks are essential protection, but Texas and Mississippi are lifting those COVID-19 restrictions.
Yeah, there's been a big row here this week over that, as you can imagine, with the governor of Texas, Greg Abbott, and then his colleague in Mississippi saying, well, the vaccines are coming now. We can relax all our restrictions, and not just relaxing restrictions on business activities in the state of Texas, but lifting the face mask mandate that the governor there grudgingly had introduced. Remember that Governor Greg Abbott is a close ally politically of former President Donald Trump. You know, while that was being cheered by Republican supporters of Governor Abbott and folks on the right in Texas, it was being widely criticized by leading business voices in the state. We saw several major corporates, General Motors, Toyota, Macy's, Target, two retailers there, saying that under no circumstances were they going to do anything to lift restrictions that were in place as far as their business activities were concerned. A huge sporting franchise in the Lone Star State, the San Antonio Spurs, the NBA team in the Alamo City of San Antonio, announced that they would not be lifting restrictions on the number of spectators that could attend events in their stadium. So there was pushback on the ground in Texas, and then pushback from Washington, with President Biden accusing the governors of Texas and Mississippi in engaging in Neanderthal thinking. The governor of Texas didn't like that one bit. He insisted it was Joe Biden who was the Neanderthal by, he claimed, allowing untold numbers of illegal immigrants from Mexico Mexico and countries to the south to walk into Texas with COVID-19 and to be allowed to spread COVID-19 throughout the state. Now, there is no empirical evidence to support the case that that has been taking place whatsoever, but it was clearly an attempt to blame foreigners for COVID-19 in the state of Texas, as opposed to the lax behavior of many people in the state who have never fully embraced some of the public health guidelines that public health officials have been espousing. I think it's also worth just making the point, this whole issue about Neanderthal thinking. The Neanderthals are getting a bad rap. You know, they are our ancestors who learned how to make tools out of stone. They learned how to make fire. They used medicinal plants to treat diseases. I mean, if you look at the history specifically of the Neanderthals, it seems perfectly possible that they might actually be face mask wearers, not face mask skeptics. So there's been this just extraordinary back and forth, you know, sort of sticks and stones conversation between President Biden in Washington and these governors down to the south. And amid all of that, anxiety that the alleviation of these restrictions will lead to a very rapid uptick in infections, hospitalizations and deaths in those states where they're dropping the restrictions.
Well, talking about vaccinations, and I'm not sure if they're wearing masks, but great apes in San Diego, they become the first non-human primates to receive those vaccinations.
Yeah, I have to say, I did not know that some of these great apes have actually tested positive for COVID-19. Apparently, they fall prey to human respiratory infections very, very easily. And so in San Diego at the zoo, several of these primates have been given an experimental vaccination that has been specifically developed for animals by a company that specializes in inoculations for pets and other, in this case, zoo-based animals. So you've seen a whole slew of these primates provided with these vaccinations, 4 orangutans, 5 bonobo monkeys given the experimental vaccine. The vaccine cannot be used by humans, and they're going to think about vaccinating other primates in this particular zoo in a bid to see whether it is effective against COVID-19. Interestingly, one of the orangutans that was vaccinated herself made history back in 1994 when she became the first orangutan to have open heart surgery. Her name apparently is Karen. Wow. And now she's become one of the first primates anywhere in the world to receive an experimental COVID-19 vaccine. It'd be very interesting to keep an eye on that and see what they conclude about the efficacy of that vaccine against the virus in the great apes.
Amazing story. Simon, let's finish off with the markets. What a resurgence.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it was all, of course, pushed in large measure by the acceleration of hiring in the United States in February. We got payroll numbers for the month that showed employers adding 379,000 jobs here. That pushed the unemployment rate down to 6.2%, and it gave the markets cause for celebration. So the Dow Jones Industrial Average climbed 1.85% in value. The NASDAQ was up 1.5 percentage points in value, and the Standard & Poor's 500 almost reached a 2% advance in value on the day. A late rebound in technology stocks also helped the S&P secure its first weekly gain in the last 3 weeks. There is, of course, optimism that where we started this conversation, those stimulus negotiations in Washington are inexorably going to reach some kind of positive conclusion, if not today, maybe tomorrow, maybe the next day. And that's also boosting the markets. But certainly it was a vibrant end to the trading week and something that investors, I think, were very, very keen to see.
No, that's good news, mate. Continue. Simon, as always, lovely to speak to you. And thank you so much for keeping us updated here in Singapore.
Thanks, Justine. Talk to you tomorrow.
Speaking there with our US Bureau Chief, Simon Marks.